This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of 19 Cats and Counting. I am your host, certified cat behaviorist Rita Reimers. You're going to love the guest we have today. We're going to be talking all about FIV and FELV. That is scaring some people, but it shouldn't anymore. So I will come back right after this message and we will talk with our special guest.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. I'm again Rita Reimers, your host. We're here with Margaret Tompkins. And Margaret is an advocate for FIV and FELV cats. Did I say that right, Margaret?
Yes, particularly feline leukemia cats are the ones that have the FELV virus.
Now, I have an FIV cat, and I know those can live pretty safely with our non-FIV cats. But knowing that the leukemia cats can also live alongside non-leukemia cats, that's new to me, because it used to be that was never, I don't want to say allowed, but it wasn't advocated.
We've learned a lot about FELV. Probably about 20 years ago, the standard procedure was just to euthanize them. You know, some people really decided these were healthy cats. Nothing wrong with them. Blood work was good. They just had this virus. And once we started, killing them and started studying them, we learned a lot about them. And for one thing, the FELV virus is a very wimpy virus outside of the cat. It's very fragile, very wimpy, doesn't live long. So it's only bad thing is that when it's inside a cat, it can be devastating to the cat.
Sure.
We see it's contagious to other cats, but not highly contagious. It's nothing like Khaleesi virus or panleukemia, ringworm, those things that are just a terror to shelters and cat owners both. It's nothing like that. It's contagious, but it is not highly contagious.
How is it passed? Is it through sharing food, water, or blood?
It's blood. It's that blood-to-blood transfer. And in most all cases, it's from the mama cat having kittens. We see so many of these cats that live just long enough to have a litter or two of kittens and pass the virus on to their offspring. We don't see old cats with progressive FELV. We just don't see them. They just die at that 7 to 11 months, and also at about a year and a half. So those that have progressive infections generally don't live very long. It's those that have mild infections, what we call regressive infections, those cats can live a normal lifespan because their immune system is taking care of the virus naturally. It's really difficult for an adult healthy cat to get FELV. Their immune system will take care of the virus regardless of the exposure. So we see it mostly in queens that have kittens, and those are the ones that end up with the FELV virus. And like I said, inside the cat, it's devastating. But outside of the cat, it doesn't live long. It's easily killed just washing your hands, would kill the virus. It's very easily killed outside of the cat.
So when you say it doesn't live long, it doesn't live long outside the host, or does it go away inside the cat if it's the milder version?
No, it doesn't go away.
Okay.
FELV is a retrovirus, and like FIV, they're both retroviruses. And what happens there is that they end up becoming part of the cat's DNA.
Okay.
So once the cat has FELV and it's in the cat and it's progressive, the cat is probably not going to shed the virus. Now, kittens, it's remarkable. Kittens, even if they're born with infections for FELV that they got from mom, some of those kittens can clear the virus. They have developing immune systems, and those immune systems can kick in and shed the virus. So for any of your listeners who have a kitten that tests positive for FELV, you want to get a confirmation test, number one. That's really critical. And then number two, give the kitten a little bit of time. Typically, if they are still positive after 6 months of age, they will stay positive. But I've seen many kittens clear the virus at about the 2 or 3 month age. They just need their immune system start maturing, and the immune system is what can kick the virus. And some kittens are just do that beautifully.
Well, see, I didn't know that. It could sometimes go away in kittens. I know a friend of mine, you know, probably 15, 20 years ago, she had a kitten that ended up being positive for leukemia. And of course, back then, they euthanize the kitten. If they'd have waited a couple months, it might have cleared up. So the veterinarian can tell the difference if you've got the one that the cats have the short lifespan. I mean, you kind of know what you're getting into.
Yes. Nowadays, we have a test for that. I mean, generally, they start out with the SNAP test, which is a screening test. And it's very good at screening. And it's about 70% right, which means it can be 30% wrong. So if you have a kitten that tests positive, and we use that SNAP test because it's cheap. Veterinarians have it. They can do it right in their office. So you can get, you know, a test done very quickly and fairly inexpensively. But if you do get that positive result, you do want to get the confirmation test. And for that, I'm going to give you a number here. It's test number 26355.
26355,
yes.
And I'll put that in the notes when this gets posted.
It is 26355, and it's from the IDEX Corporation. There's no other test that's a substitute for it. It's a one of a kind, and it actually does two tests. It does what we call the quantitative PCR test, and that's where, if it's positive, it will give you the viral load, which is a measure of how much virus is in the cat. And that's where we get this progressive and regressive differentiation. If there's a million or more copies of the virus per milliliter of blood, that is deemed a progressive infection. And if there's less than that, less than a million, then it's a regressive infection.
And those cats have a longer life.
Yes. What we've learned by work from Dr. Julie Levy with the, she's with the University of Florida. She's both a DVM and a PhD. In her research, they've been studying, I think they started with about 132 cats, FELV positive cats. And these were part of the Austin Pets Alive adoption program.
Oh, yeah, I know about them, yeah.
And they just started studying these cats. And what they have found is that those that are regressively infected, so they've got a little bit of the virus, they're positive, but it's a low positive, those cats can live a normal lifespan. So that is really wonderful news that we, you know, we used to say it was a death sentence, but it's not. If there's a little virus, regressively infected cats, they can live a normal lifespan. And what we do find is that those that are progressively infected, however, they will tend to have a shorter lifespan, and they're more likely to develop what we call FELV-related disease and, you know, die at a much younger age.
That was going to be my next question is, are there any kind of complications or health issues we need to look out for leukemia cats? We'll talk about FIV because I know there are some for that FIV virus.
Well, in fact, both of those, they destroy the cat's immune system. So it makes it really easy for the cat to pick up the secondary infections and diseases. They can get all sorts of unique tumors and lymphoma, cancers. They have a very, it can be anything. It just makes them much more susceptible to picking up diseases because they have no immune system to fight it off.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
That's what, you know, and they can get anything. FELV itself doesn't have symptoms. I mean, we say there's these FELV-related diseases. So the cat might get lymphoma. We lose a lot of them to non-regenerative anemia, where the bone marrow stops making red blood cells. And of course, without red blood cells, you're not going to fare very well in this world. So that's why we lose a lot of cats to just these other things that they can get.
Sad, but hopefully there's more research going on and we can change that in the future.
Well, I tell you, we have pretty much figured out how to prevent the transmission of FELV, FIV as well. We pretty much know how to stop the spread of it, but what we don't know yet is how to deal with a cat that has FELV. Once they've got the disease, it becomes part of their DNA, and it's very difficult for them to get rid of it. All they have going really is their immune system, so we try to boost their immune system as much as possible, but still, it's the cat doesn't, there's no cure for FELV. There's no cure for FIV. We simply don't have cures for those two.
I have an FIV cat. He was trapped in a TNR. I was telling you before we started recording. He was feral. He's a sweetheart now. And he's about 3. So he doesn't have any additional health issues yet. But there are some other issues that can come along with FIV. Is that right?
Yes. We often see dental issues in cats with FIV and also FELV for that purpose, too. They may have stomatitis, and these are things that are somewhat treatable. I do have one cat that's had a full mouth extraction.
Right, that cat, I've heard that's
yeah,
happens.
That cat doesn't have a virus, but had stomatitis at a very young age, and it was severe. It's like the gums were just red and bleeding, and nothing could be done about it. So she ended up with a full mouth extraction at a very young age, and she does fine. She eats what she wants to eat, and you know, she gets along without any trouble, but some of those can be expensive because dentals are often expensive.
They are expensive, even for people.
Yes, absolutely. It's something to watch out for if you have an FIV cat, but of course, these cats are like any other cat. They can come down with the URI, and you want to treat that.
Sure.
I certainly recommend that if you have an immune-compromised cat, if that cat gets sick, take it to the vet. Don't wait thinking, oh, the cat will get through this, because they need your help. They can't fight off disease like a regular cat can because they have this compromised immune system. So get them to the kitty doctor.
Definitely, definitely. I used to own a cats-only pet-sitting company. I owned it for 17 years. And I would get a lot of, not so much with the behavior clients, but with the sit clients, they would contact me and say, this is what's happening with my cat. Should I go to the vet? And I'm like, don't call me. If you think your cat needs to see a vet, chances are he does. And even just for getting the peace of mind, it's worth the trip to the veterinarian.
Absolutely.
Not enough cats get regular veterinary care.
I'm a big proponent of feline-only vet practices.
We only have one here.
I know, and a lot of people don't have any. They are becoming more common, but what we find is that since these people are specializing in cats only, they often are much more knowledgeable about viruses like FIV and FELV. So they're just more knowledgeable. Maybe they've had more trainings. They've kind of specialized. So I fully recommend a feline-only vet practice if you can find one.
Yeah, I'm 30 miles south of Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm in a little town called Lancaster, South Carolina. So the cattle-only vet is actually in Charlotte. It would probably be an hour for me to get there. But I have a really great vet that seems to understand cats very well. So it's really important that you have a veterinarian that isn't afraid of cats, because I used to have one that was afraid of cats, which was really funny. Anytime the cat moved, he was like, oh. So yeah, you don't want a veterinarian like that, that's for sure. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back. I want to ask you about a few other things. We'll be right back.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting. We're talking with Margaret Tompkins, and we're learning a lot about FIV, FELV, and I also wanted to talk about FIP a little bit, because things have changed in the FIP world really recently, as a matter of fact.
Yes, FIP is a terrible virus. It comes from the coronavirus, just like COVID did.
Yeah.
It's in that same family of viruses, and probably 25% to more of cats have the coronavirus in their systems, and it just sort of sits there, doesn't do any damage. But in some cats, that can mutate into this FIP, which is the feline infectious peritonitis.
Which used to always be a death sentence. Yeah.
Yes, it still is. If you have a FIP cat and you don't treat it, I don't know if, I think they say the survival rate is like, 1% or something. I've never even encountered that 1% that make it without help. So it's either you euthanize the cat or you treat the cat. And now we have some marvelous new laws and everything. Used to be the drugs had to be, they weren't illegal, but they were black market. You had to sort of buy them, behind the scenes and get them. They came from China. But now you can get your FIP drugs through compounding pharmacies. There's probably about 24 of them now. And some of them are very inexpensive. It's really marvelous. And you can work through your vet, which is by far the best way to do it.
Definitely.
Work with your vet, get the compounded drugs, the GS medication, and, help your cat. Typically, it's an 84-day treatment, just 3 months, and then another observation period for 3 months. Sometimes cats can relapse and you have to go through it again. The ones I've had have been cured after the 84-day treatment, and it's marvelous to see. The success rate for treating FIP cats is like 95%+. And I think it's only that low because sometimes people don't start treatment soon enough. But typically, when you start treatment, you will see some improvement within 2 or 3 days. It's just miraculous.
Do you have to isolate the cat from your other cats when they've got FIP?
No, FIP is not contagious.
Oh.
That's the one good thing about it. It's from the coronavirus. It mutates into FIP, but FIP itself is not contagious to another cat. Now, another cat might have the coronavirus, and it might mutate into FIP, but it's done internally within the cat. So the cat, you know, the cat can bite somebody or something, and, you know, another cat, that sort of thing. It's not going to transmit the FIP virus. Once they, it's just, it's internal to the cat, but it is fatal to the cat unless you do treatment. And because you can get it now from compounding pharmacies, and these are FDA approved, the cost of those drugs has come way down.
Yeah, the ones from China on the black market were, or off-label use, I should say, they were very expensive.
Yes, those off-label drugs were, everyone sort of got a kickback or part of the money that you paid. So it was a huge industry, if you will, and a lot of people profited while cat owners paid a lot of money. But now that incentive is much more decreased because the supply is there. You can choose which pharmacy you get the drugs from, and your veterinarians can certainly help you select, you know, the drugs that you get.
Are there certain symptoms that we should be on the lookout for any of those three diseases?
Well, for FIP, FIP can come in different forms. The most common is wet FIP, and that's where the cat, the belly fills with fluid. And if you take a sample of it, it's kind of a straw-colored, thick fluid, but that's the most common one. They can also have dry FIP. There is ocular FIP that seems to affect their eyes.
Huh,
and
I
then
heard of
there's
that one.
Neurological FIP. And neurofib is where you see neurological issues. The cat may lose the ability to walk and just, you know, lie there, may not be able to urinate or defecate on its own. So those are, they're not as common as the wet FIP is, but they're every bit as serious and every bit as deadly. And cats can have more than one kind of FIP at the same time.
At the same time, yeah.
Yeah, I know of one that had three different kinds of FIP.
Oh my gosh.
However, one medication treats it.
Well, that was my next question.
Yeah. That GS medication treats all the different forms and symptoms of it. But that's the biggest one, is a swollen belly, and the cat just sort of starts to deteriorate. It's not very common that it happens, but certainly if you have a cat that looks pregnant and you know the cat isn't pregnant, then you probably need to investigate FIP. And
it's
there's not just one test for it either. It's generally a clinical diagnosis that is made by the veterinarian looking at blood work. Certain numbers and combinations, ratios of those numbers may indicate FIP. So it's based upon a number of factors that your veterinarian looks for. So it's not like FELV or FIV where we've got a test, you know, that's kind of
right.
Definitive. It isn't so with FIP. We just, it's the best educated guess of the veterinarian that you're working with. So that's what you need to do, is get with your veterinarian and catch it as early as possible.
Are there any inoculations for FIV or feline leukemia? I know there's not one for FIP yet, but they're working on it.
I tell you, there is that. We used to have a vaccine for FIV here in the United States, but we haven't had that available for many years.
Why is that?
It wasn't needed. I mean, that was sort of the opinion of the experts. I'm not sure if it stopped all the replication of FIV. And the thing about FIV is that once the cat is spayed or neutered, generally FIV does not get passed from one cat to another.
Sure.
FIV is transmitted through deep bite wounds, and that's from adult cats mating and aggressively fighting. I'm not talking play fighting. I'm talking about that all-out tomcat.
The whirling dervish kind of. Tasmanian devil.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the kind of fighting. Those deep bite wounds, they rupture blood vessels. And there's a lot of virus that's on the cat's teeth. I mean, it's just in their saliva. So when the cat chomps down on another cat, or it can happen during mating. That's when those blood vessels get ruptured and the virus gets transmitted. But what we find is that once you have neutered the cats, they stop fighting like that.
That's true.
You don't have those deep bite wounds anymore. And the same thing for FELV. We know that it's primarily passed from queen to kitten. But if you spay that cat, she's not having kittens anymore.
Right. So it's not being passed.
Exactly. And feline leukemia can also be passed through those deep bite wounds. That saliva to blood transfer is not as effective as the blood to blood transmission, but is still a way to get the virus from an infected cat into the bloodstream of another cat. And that's what you're trying to prevent. And just spaying and neutering the animals, that pretty much just stops the transmission.
Sure. That's another reason for TNR existing.
You know, I love TNR people. I know that they think they're doing it for population control.
That's more than that.
It's like, that's disease control.
Sure.
They're stopping FIV and virtually stopping the spread of FELV as well.
That's
awesome.
So
I love TNR people. They're doing a world of good. Then that's the answer.
Too.
That's the answer.
There's so many things you can do to help that. You don't have to be out there being the one trapping the cats. There's other things you can do. Like me, I don't think I'm physically fit to go, you know, underneath houses and getting cats out.
Well, that's why my hat's off to TNR people. They physically do what I cannot do any longer, just because I'm not as mobile as those cats they're trying to catch.
Yeah, me either.
But I certainly can help with certain education and things like that. So we all do what we can.
How did you get involved with all of this, Margaret? It's fascinating.
Oh, I retired in 2011. I had a long time career in working with large Oracle databases and retired. And I hadn't visited my friends in Indiana for a long time. So that was my first thing. Retired, I went to visit a friend, and she was fostering five kittens, five little kittens that were the sickest kittens in the world. They had every parasite and thing that you could imagine. And so she's taking samples and dispensing medication. I just got to play with them and got acquainted with them. Those were the famous bee kitties, Bo, Barney, Belinda, Bernice, and Bernard. Those five kittens, and she nursed them all back to health, and then they were tested on a screening test, and they all came positive for FELV. And that was back in the days when they were just euthanizing, and she wasn't about to euthanize those kittens after she'd invested so much work in them. So the next thing was to find a place for these kittens to go, and they went to Best Friends Animal Sanctuary.
Oh, you love them.
In Kanab, Utah. And that was my first donation, was to help transport them out there, get them out there safely. And one died at about the 11-month mark.
Oh, so he must have had the progressive version.
We couldn't test for that then, but yes. And two of them lived to be about that average 1.5-year mark from diagnosis. And then two of them, Bo lived to be almost 8 years old, and Barney was about 5 years old. And they became legends of Kalmar. There's even benches dedicated to them. Kalmar is the building where the feline leukemia cats were housed at Best Friends. And they always had sleepovers. You could get a cat for a night, you know,
cuddle with
the cat. Wonderful.
I love they do that.
Yeah. And Barney, I don't think ever spent a night at home. He was always a premier cat that was, people loved to have sleepovers with Barney. And he think for the longest time, he held the record for the most sleepovers there at Best Friends. So a lot of people got acquainted with Barney.
So these days, though, those cats that live to be 5 and 8, I would think that with the treatments we have, they would have a longer life now.
I would think possibly, now that we know more about it, and thanks to the wonderful research of Dr. Levy, she has just been amazing. They have this study, it's now, I believe, in our 8th or 9th year, that we've been studying the same cats, And they started out, I think, about two-thirds of the cats were progressively infected, or at least they seemed to have a lot of the virus, and about one-third were regressively infected or didn't have as much virus. And we didn't know at the time just how much is too much. So they've learned a lot of things, and working with the IDEX Corporation to come up with that confirmation test that we now have. So it seems like cats that have a little bit of the virus can do quite well. They generally are not shedding the virus. They don't naturally have symptoms of FELV-related disease, and they can live a normal lifespan, which is just, you know, wonderful news. Sure. It's those that have a lot of the virus, more of a progressive infection, those are the ones that tend to have much shorter lifespans.
Is there anything you would like to make sure our listeners know about these cats?
I think the number one, we don't need to kill these cats. No cat should be euthanized because it has a virus.
Right.
There's just no need for it anymore. The American Association of Feline Practitioners put their recommendations and guidelines in 2020, and they recommend adoption for these cats. And that's why we're seeing more and more of them adopted into loving homes. They make great pets. They're just awesome cats to have. So that's what the outcome that we want for these feline leukemia cats. And reach out on Facebook. There's some wonderful groups there. One of them is the owners group, owners of FELV/FIV cats. It's an excellent group. I highly recommend it. It's got about 23,000 members.
Wow.
And these are all people that you don't have to own a cat, you know, to be in that group, but it's great for education. It is well moderated. There's always, you know, they try to discourage the spam treatments that people come up with. You know, there's no cure for FELV, so if someone says there is, just tune them out. There isn't. But, you know, we're working on, you know, the research goes on every day. But those are two recommendations I have. And the other one is to attend the Feline Leukemia Conference Day, which is July 18th this year.
July 18th. Is it an online conference?
Yes, it's online, and it's done by Stacey LeBaron, just an awesome lady that sponsors a lot of these conferences, that like the TNR ones that you're attending. She's just awesome, and has been doing that for, she was rescuing these feline cats, you know, 20 years before it became popular. So she's been doing this a long time.
I just had her on the podcast. The last one I recorded was with Stacy. And I actually just bought her pass, that if you buy the pass, and I did the $25 a month one, you can get access to everything, all of the programs, you know, the TNR. I actually already took the surrender prevention program, Dr. Geller. So I would say that that group you recommended, that would be a great place to start if you're thinking about adding an FIV cat to your life, or a feline leukemia cat to your life.
Yes, and you can post questions in there. It's a great place to get answers, even if you don't have a cat, but you know of someone who does, and maybe you're the go-between, but you will get quality information and really from some experts there. So I highly recommend it.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad you came to be on the podcast.
My pleasure.
You're welcome back anytime, especially if there's new breakthroughs for some of these diseases.
We're learning more and more every day. I'm just amazed at it. So yes, the research is there. It's ongoing. And one of these days, hopefully there will be a cure, and I'll be the first one to be screaming it from the top of my lungs.
Thank you so much. And of course, I have to thank Mark Winter for giving me this spot on Pet Life Radio. I am forever grateful. And don't forget, everyone, what's my catchphrase? Every day is Catter Day. We'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.